killers, murderers, decoding the crime verse.
911, what's your emergency? Hello, hello, and welcome back to Decoding the Crime Verse. My name is Danny, and I'm joined with
Glory.
That is correct. And today, we look at one of the most devastating mass shootings in New Zealand.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. A tiny seaside settlement, a man with a rifle, and 22 hours of unimaginable fear.
Just by the way, if you're wondering why there's a dramatic silence pause, Danny just decided to stop out of nowhere. I think her brain might have just hit a little bit of a...
No, I was just waiting for you to say something.
You know, the show goes on. I just find it interesting. It's not every day that we speak about countries like New Zealand. So
we've got to keep it interesting here on the show.
I guess so.
This is the story of the Aramoana Massacre.
I don't know why, I just thought of, you know, Moana, the animation. But anyway.
Me too, as I read the name.
Yeah.
A tragedy that changed a community forever and exposed a darkness nobody saw coming. So, Aramoana, 1990. A small coastal township tucked away on the South Island of New Zealand. Population just over 260 people. It's not a lot of people.
Not at all.
Okay. A place where kids played on the beach, neighbors knew each other by name, doors were left unlocked, and crime was practically non-existent.
Well, I suppose if there's like, what, 250, 260 people in one place, I mean,
that's
like everybody knows your business.
Everybody knows. Yeah, if you steal something, people will be like, wait, my iPad was stolen, now you have an iPad. My iPad, give it back.
It's more like someone stole your iPad and you know, already know who it is, so you just go and knock on their door.
Exactly.
And like, can I have my iPad back now?
It was peaceful. And into this calm, one man carried a storm. His name was David Malcolm Gray, a 33-year-old recluse. Quiet, isolated, socially withdrawn. I wonder where we've heard this before. He lived alone in a rundown cottage filled with books, survival gear, and firearms. Locals thought he was odd, but harmless. A loner, yes. Dangerous, no. I mean, you know, in those small towns, there's always one weirdo.
Yeah, the one that nobody talks to.
Exactly. But in the days leading up to November 13th, 1990, something inside David Gray snapped. Gray's behavior had been deteriorating for months. He became increasingly paranoid. He had angry confrontations with his neighbors. He was seen muttering to himself, and he stopped caring for his property, as well as he began obsessively buying ammunition. Now, in a small town, if someone became obsessive with ammunition, I'm kicking them out.
I don't necessarily see a need for that, just based off of the fact that they're buying ammunition.
Yeah, just based on human.
Maybe
society.
It's like just, you know, got a new hobby and his hobby is like hunting.
Sure.
You know?
Not in today's world, just saying. On November 13th, an argument with a neighbor, Gary Holdman, escalated. They had previously clashed over property boundaries and noise. That evening, something pushed Gary over the edge. What happened next remains one of the darkest moments in New Zealand's history. At around 7:30 p.m., Gary walked over to Holden's house carrying a semi-automatic rifle. He called out to Gary. When Gary opened the door, Gray shot him instantly. Holden's two daughters, one was 11 and one was 9, ran for their lives. Gray turned his rifle on the older one, killing her in the front yard. Jasmine, who was the younger one, managed to escape by hiding under the neighbor's house. Gunshots shattered the quiet Arimoana evening. Neighbors thought it was fireworks, but within minutes they realized the truth. Gray was roaming the streets with a rifle and he was hunting. Talk about horror movie vibes, I'm just saying. Gray moved from house to house, methodically shooting at anyone he saw. His victims included his neighbor, Gary Holden, and his daughter, several adults who rushed to investigate, a man who came out to help the wounded, two men who tried to check on Gary's home, a local teacher, and a police officer responding to the first call. Gray showed no pattern except destruction. He fired at houses, cars, and even residents hiding behind fences. He was relentless, mechanical, and cold. Families hid in closets and under tables. Parents shielded their children. Some survivors said they could hear Gray laughing as he fired. By the time police arrived, Arimoana looked like a war zone. That's actually pretty scary. Like, it's one thing to hear gunshots and then, like, let's say someone's shot in your street and the person runs away. But to have the person walking up and down, shooting, just randomly...
I just find it interesting.
...is completely
mental. Yeah, I find it interesting that, like, is there no one there that could defend themselves, someone or a couple of other people?
Well, if you live in a little town with 260 people, I'm telling you, most people don't own guns.
I can understand that, but, I mean, surely there's someone there who... might be like some part of law enforcement or something.
Well, they did respond. I mean, then the officer got killed. But I'm saying, imagine how scary that is. You're in your home. You don't know. You can hear him shooting, and you don't know if he's coming to your home next.
I just thought hiding in the closet was quite interesting, but
the closet. I don't. I'd climb into the roof somewhere, hide in a box. I don't know what I would do. I really don't know what I would do. New Zealand's police were not equipped for a gunman wielding a semi-automatic rifle. Many officers were unarmed. Okay, there's another problem. Others had only small revolvers. Because again, when your crime limit or crime rate is not like through the roof, the police aren't also, I mean, they don't have like a SWAT team in America who could come in with pistols blazing and all that stuff.
Yeah.
The first officer on the scene was Sergeant Stuart Gerthy, and he realized the scale of the disaster immediately. He evacuated families, secured streets, and radioed for the armed officers squad, which is new equivalent of New Zealand SWAT team. Okay, so they did have one. My mistake. Knowing the danger, Gerthy still went after Gray. He confronted Gray near the township's main road, and a brief exchange of fire followed. Sergeant Gerthy was shot and killed, and he died trying to protect the families still trapped in their homes. As darkness fell, Arimoana became a nightmare landscape. Streets were blocked, helicopters circled overhead, police snipers arrived, and residents were told to stay hidden and silent. Gray alternated between hiding in homes and stalking through the darkness. The armed offender squad tracked his movements, but he knew the terrain and slipped away repeatedly. For hours, I mean, and again, this wasn't like 10 minutes, this was hours, the town held its breath. Every sound felt like a gunshot, and every shadow felt threatening. I promise you, I would have such PTSD. If I was a kid, I'd leave the planet. I'd go live on Mars. I'm just saying. Okay. By dawn, Gray had killed 13 people. It's a lot.
Yeah.
The breakthrough came the next morning. Police spotted smoke rising from a house. Gray had set the carpet on fire to stay warm. Talk about being stupid.
I think there's a little bit more than stupidity involved.
Like what? Like put the carpet around you as a blanket. Why are we... Oh.
Yeah, like put it around you, tuck underneath it, you know, or something.
Surrounding the home, officers called for him to surrender. Gray burst out of the burning house, firing wildly. A firefight broke out and police returned fire, and Gray was shot multiple times, you would think. He fell to the ground but continued reaching for his rifle. This is the definition of somebody doesn't know when to quit. The officers fired again, fatally wounding him. After 22 hours of terror, 22 hours, the rampage was over. Gary Gray died at age 33. He never gave a confession, he never offered a motive, and he never explained why he turned a quiet township into a battlefield.
Talk about another cliffhanger crime.
No, but you see, this is what makes me so irritated. I'm like, why? Why did he do this? And I'll never know because I can't ask him.
Yeah.
Oh, and I just wonder what triggered him. What made it snap? What happened that he just opened fire on this town and he kept them basically hostage for 22 hours? Bank robbers don't even get that right. Never heard of a bank robbery for 22 hours.
Yeah.
Okay, so New Zealand was shattered. Mass shootings were almost unheard of. The scale of violence was unimaginable. But from tragedy came change. There were major reforms which included re-evaluation of gun laws, tighter firearm licensing, restrictions on semi-automatic weapons, improved police training, and better mental health awareness. Arawana became a symbol of both grief and resilience. The town rebuilt, but the emotional scars ran deep, even till today. In 2010, a film titled Out of the Blue helped tell the victims' stories and honor their memory. The massacre remains a defining moment in New Zealand's history. And so the Arawana massacre reminds us that violence literally can erupt from anywhere, even in a quiet little coastal town of New Zealand with 260 residents, okay? And it shows how one person's quiet descent into paranoia can destroy an entire community, which is true. And so, and unfortunately, like, and this is the fact, some places do have higher crime rates than others, but crime is everywhere. People are crazy everywhere. People are paranoid everywhere. And sometimes we get bigger scale things like this, and sometimes it happens in the home where it doesn't even get reported.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's what happens when you live in a sinful world. We're going to have stuff like this, and literally nowhere is safe. Not even if you lived on an island all by yourself. Okay? Then you'll have some spider or maybe, some snake coming
okay,
to
Okay, maybe
eat
not
you,
a spider,
okay?
But probably like a snake, you know.
Or a shark.
Or a shark. It could be, I mean, do you find crocodiles on island? Alligators?
No.
Not necessarily. Oh,
not
okay.
necessarily.
But like anything, man.
Anything. And so I thought this was a very interesting case because it really did show how it can happen anywhere. It really can happen. So you moving, it's never actually going to secure your safety.
Exactly.
Because it can happen anywhere. And so, yeah, and I also think, like I said, it was very interesting. And we'll never know why he did it, what his motives were. I think, I personally think that argument with his neighbor something must have snapped.
Yeah.
Something must have been said. Again, the neighbor's not going to exactly come forward. And oh, but the neighbor died. Never mind, the neighbor can't come forward. But my point is that
got rid of the reason.
got rid of the evidence. Something must have been said, but my point is something was said and a guy goes and kills 13 people. No, this built up a lifetime of things happening, not dealing with issues, hurt, betrayal. I don't know. It all built up and then suddenly snap. And you had a 22-hour rampage. I promise you, that is literally it. When I say it, it sounds like a synopsis for a movie, like the stuff from imagination, like those thriller movies. It doesn't sound like a real life scenario.
Yeah,
it's crazy. But I thought it was a very interesting case. Do you have anything you'd like to add before we end?
No, just the fact that this is quite a crazy case, and I mean, like you said, 22 hours of mass shooting is a little bit
<It's> wild.
I know, like,
I'd left the next day. I wouldn't have stayed in town.
What do you mean the next day? The next second, I'm out of there. You think about it, it's like Die Hard meets Scarface.
Honestly,
meets Rambo.
Honestly. Like I said, a movie synopsis really is. Honestly. And so we hope you enjoyed the show. That is the story of the Arimawana massacre. We will see you same time, same place next week. Bye-bye.
Active FM. Radio has never been better.